Welcome to Detained, a criminal justice podcast that seeks to examine real experiences from every perspective. I'm your host, Arish Rivers. Today, I'm talking to Kareem Lacayo, a San Francisco man who's seemingly harassed by the San Francisco Police Department on a constant basis, despite his best efforts to stay out of trouble. Here's Kareem now. How long ago did they kick you out? It's 4 o'clock now.
Maybe 30 minutes ago, 35 minutes ago.
35 minutes, okay. And then you were trying to get your property back. So you told me what happened, but real quick, we're out in San Francisco County, and Kareem just got out of custody about half an hour ago, and you're trying to get your property back.
My property, my phone, and it's a hassle. It's a runaround, making me jump through loopholes. I went to the property room. Once I got there, they told me to reach out to the mission station, which was the station where I was detained, and they took me there. Mm-hmm. And once I did that, mission station then told me to ask the gang task force. And then right now, as I was going over there to A50, I happened to run into the gang task force, and he had the audacity to first tell me the property room would not even give me my phone because they were closed, which is not true. They don't close till 4:30. It's only 4:06.
Yeah, and that was before you even, I mean, we took some time to set up now, so yeah. That was even before 4 o'clock.
Yeah, even before 4 o'clock, right, maybe 10 minutes ago. So, and then after that lame excuse, he went and said, well, you know, if you just tell me you're going to let me go through your phone tomorrow, I'll give you your phone tomorrow. So which one is it? You know, it's these are the games they play, the manipulation they do, and it's ongoing. You know, it's ongoing, and it's very stressful.
Kareem can tend to run with a rough crowd, but he's tried to keep a clean record ever since his release from prison years ago. As your mom put it, I hope she doesn't mind me saying this. She goes, I know my son is not necessarily an angel, but he's not doing wrong.
Yes.
In late 2019, Kareem was a passenger in a vehicle that was pulled over. One of the other occupants in the vehicle was wearing a GPS tracking unit as a stipulation of their own release while completing their case. Officers found a loaded firearm in the vehicle, and all the occupants were arrested. From what I know, based on being able to help you out, I mean, you're involved with youth sports to the point. I mean, you're really keeping your nose clean,
Yes.
And it just seems that, like, these cats just have an axe to grind.
Yeah, they sure do. And it's exhausting. You know, I'm definitely a law-abiding citizen. You know, I work with kids, middle school kids, after school program as a soccer coach. We conduct poetry classes as well. You know, I'm very in tune with the community and the younger kids and giving back and leading in the right way, you know. And there's many kids that could vouch for this in the schools that I work at, you know, that can say this is who our coach is, this is who our mentor is. He's, you know, he's a good guy, he's a positive guy, and nothing to do with the way the police has been portraying me and attacking me and antagonizing me, you know. So, yeah, it's a hard pill to swallow.
Well, how long were you stuck in custody this last go around?
Since Friday, so four days.
4 days, and in that time, did they ever tell you? I mean, what were they telling you? Did they give you any information about what was going on, or were they trying to get information from you? Or
no, it was kind of just a waiting game to see why they had arrested me again. And you know, once I went to court, you know, they obviously put another bail was set for the same case, which obviously makes sense, because if I bailed out before, why wouldn't they allow me to bail out again, you know, and continue my life? So that was pretty much it, and everything's pending still.
Which is an interesting piece, because when your family first came in and said, hey, you'd been arrested again, I figured, okay, well, if it's for the same case, then we could just help you out and do a bond rewrite.
Yeah.
But because of the new San Francisco rules that the district attorney set, I mean, we've been sitting here all week long and seeing everybody from, you know, just domestic arguments to some real heinous crimes. Everybody getting no bail.
No bail?
Everybody across the board.
Wow.
In 2020, 2 weeks after he took oath of office as San Francisco's newest district attorney, Chesa Boudin announced that his office would no longer seek cash bail as a condition for defendants' pretrial release. Proponents of the measure say the ending of the practice will help end the discriminatory approach to pretrial detention, a system they say is based on wealth. Opponents of the measure say it'll actually do more harm to the exact groups and communities Boudin's office seeks to help.
Every time you bring it up, every time I see you bring it up, Mom, I go back and I want to like revisit how I think about it. Because when you read about what people say about it, it's like, oh yeah, you know, people can are able to buy, you know, their freedom with money. And of course, that sounds bad, right? And then you dig in and it seems like the folks who are on the side of like, let's get rid of all bail, you know, are making the right noises. They're saying the right things. You know, when they talk about how the underprivileged, like underrepresented minorities, those are the ones that are more impacted. I'm like, yeah, let's not do that anymore.
That's Otieno, a father and software engineer living in San Jose, California.
I feel like I land on the side of getting rid of cash bail kind of by default. But like I said, every time you talk about it, I'm like, ah, I got to revisit. Because I can't be right. It can't be that easy.
Tony Montoya, who serves as president of the San Francisco Police Officers Association, says Boudin is in the process of building the largest criminal justice revolving door imaginable.
It seemed like motivated reasoning by someone who was like, I like the system the way it is. And it feels a little bit disingenuous as a result. Like, I don't think the goal of getting rid of bail is to have a revolving door. I think one of the things that you've mentioned in the past is that it will make it harder for anyone to get out, but it also makes it easy for some folks to get out that maybe shouldn't. So maybe it's going to let out the wrong people, and I'm sympathetic to that. I think an algorithm can be faulty, but this specific person making that specific argument, that just seems, it seems like motivated reasoning. It just seems like he started at a place and was like, I believe all the people we lock up, should go to jail, that's just not how the justice system works. That feels inaccurate. I want folks to get arrested. I want someone to say, you know, this person is not violent. This person, you know, deserves to get out. They get out, they come back, they have their day in court, right? I don't want it to be like, well, we locked them up and they should suffer because we're cops and we know the best. So, I don't know. I put very little stock into what the head of sort of a police support organization, the police, not auxiliary, but I don't know what they call the group, what the group was called again. But yeah, I don't put a lot of stock in that. I hope that's not what Boudin is doing, though.
People in California have a lot to say on the subject to plenty of varying degrees. So I hunted down a friend of mine who lives in Texas and briefed him on the situation really quickly.
I think realistically, if all we're going to do is react to every problem that we have, then we're never going to get anywhere.
That's Jeremy Jobe. He's a father and marketing professional living out in Texas. He also happens to be the founder of the Facebook group, A Bunch of Dads, which boasts thousands of members, all weighing in on different opinions about fatherhood, from business to video games.
What we need to do is that if we have a problem with homelessness, and if we have a problem with vagrancy and thievery, and we have a problem with drugs, if these are problems, then what we need to do is we need to start coming up with comprehensive solutions that actually carry people out of these cities and put them into a place where they can actually grow.
You're talking about addressing the actual root causes for their circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, go look at Doors of Change. Doors of Change is a beautiful charity down in San Diego. I worked with them for, 4 or 5 years. I built their websites and everything. They're wonderful people. And look at how many people they have pulled off the street. Look at how many people they have taken from, I have to go search in a fucking dumpster for my lunch today, to I can pay my own fucking bills in California.
Back to Kareem. I want to talk a little bit about Danilo Barraza. Unfortunately, your friend was murdered recently, and Danilo was the person that they arrested as the prime suspect. I had the opportunity to meet your friend Amir.
Yes.
We helped him out. We got to meet his family. His dad is a cool guy, man.
Yes.
It was really tough talking to his family, especially along the whole process, from his dad just trying to find Amir after he went missing.
Yes.
To even handling the red tape of the bail and the account after everything happened.
Yes.
Amir was brutally murdered just weeks after I had the opportunity to meet him and his family and help him bail out of jail. The San Francisco Chronicle reports that Amir had been missing for 9 days when police responded on January 18th to an isolated industrial stretch of Treasure Island where a body was found burned beyond recognition. Autopsy reports also showed that bullets had entered his body. A gold watch matching Amir's was discovered among the ashes, but it would take 5 more days for the medical examiner to confirm that those were his remains. Danilo Barraza of San Francisco is a prime suspect in Amir's murder. He's currently in custody in San Francisco County and faces a murder charge after video footage, phone records, and GPS tracking device linked him to the murder site. Some of Kareem's friends and family told me about the last time he had spoken to Amir. Kareem was set to give Amir a ride, but Amir changed the plans and told him that Danilo would be picking him up. So, do you think it's possible that the cops tried to drum up some kind of bunk something in an attempt to be able to detain you and extract information from you?
I feel like that's definitely right up their alley. Like, you know, I wouldn't push that past them, you know, just based on the way the treatment that I've had. You know, they haven't treated me fairly or like, you know, regular citizens. So I could definitely see them trying to manipulate a situation, you know, especially a situation like that.
Being as close to Amir as you were, I've gotten phone calls about some other people you guys know, and it looks like the cops are trying to find them as well. So when you were in custody, did they ever try to talk to you about items not related to your case?
Actually, I can't say they did. No, they didn't. They didn't. Nothing was ever brought up.
How did you and Amir meet?
We went to Skyline College together, played soccer together. Yeah, we had a psychology class together. Yeah, man, it was, he's my brother.
How long did you guys know each other?
3 years now.
All right.
3 years. Yeah. 3 years, and it was an everyday thing. You know, we used to be together every day. You know, we went to college, junior college together, had a class together, and also played for the soccer team. Yeah, so, you know, we shared a lot of the same passions, you know, so.
And yeah, again, man, I'm really sorry about to hear it happen. We had his flyer up in our windows for a while until his dad came in and let us know what happened. Do you anticipate probably more run-ins with the cops as far as things developing?
Yeah, I definitely anticipate them, especially since I'm going to be in San Francisco and, you know, and I'm going back to the same neighborhood I grew up in, you know, unfortunately, you know, because it's like, you know, the cops know me. So, and it's not a good thing. So, I definitely foresee maybe them messing with me for whatever reason, you know, X amount of reason, just even when they see me, just to do it. So that's kind of typical, you know, like a stop and frisk and all that. Even when I wasn't on parole or, you know, it's always been that kind of dynamic with the police in the neighborhood. So, yeah, I'm definitely expecting that, and I'm gonna be ready for it. You know, I don't got nothing to hide. So,
how did all this stuff start out? I mean, I had the opportunity to meet your family and help bail you out not too long ago. And you know, when everybody came back in and they said, hey, you know, they came by the house, they tossed it, they rearrested him. And when I looked at the information in the system, you've been booked in on a brand new case, even though...
It's the same case.
Same case, yeah. Same charges, same case, you know?
Yeah, it was a little strange. You know, I was just going about my day, another day in the mission. And, you know, I was going to a smoke shop right there on 18th and Mission. Really nothing, you know, crazy. It's a regular afternoon. And I saw some cops like in an undercover car or whatever, and I didn't really think nothing of it, although that same like SUV that the cops, those undercover cops are always in, has pulled me over and harassed me multiple times. I didn't think nothing of it because I'm not hiding nothing. I'm not running from nothing. You know, it was just a regular day in my neighborhood. I was just going to a smoke shop.
Yeah.
So, you know, of course, you know, instinct tells me to keep my eye out for them because normally they're trying to, you know, harass me. So, you know, they watch me. I watch them. You know, they go up a few blocks and I hop out of my car. And before I could even get to the smoke shop, which is maybe 10, 15 feet away, they're on me and hemming me up and throwing me against the wall and putting me under arrest without even reading my Miranda rights, you know, without even telling me I had an apparent warrant. You know, this is, you know, these are all things that I had to deal with, you know, and I was in shock, and I even started crying for help because I felt like I was being violated, you know, and
yeah, when all sense of control is taken away, I mean, you're minding your own business.
Yeah,
and exactly. This stuff kind of happens to you. I mean, it sounds, I mean, these guys obviously know you by face, by name.
Yeah.
How long ago did everything first start, man? I mean, where, you grew up out here in San Francisco, right?
Yes, I grew up out here in San Francisco, and, you know, yes, I might have went, you know, to prison, but I went to prison when I was 18. I'm 30 years old. I'm going to turn 30 now. The reason why I say that is because what I went to prison for was 12 years ago. Yeah. So I get out. I'm on parole. I get out on parole 2016. Had no violation, parole violations. Didn't commit one infraction whatsoever. But these cops, is it okay to say names?
Yeah, absolutely.
Officer Mayo and, he's just the main culprit, I feel like. But him and his little crew of guys that he's always with always seem to harass me. And here's one example, like, while I was on parole, my parole agent would come to my house to, you know, conduct the drug test and search my house once a month. Yet these cops would still find a way to come to my house 2-3 times a month after my parole agent has come and already drug tested me and conducted searches.
Man.
So, you know, it was a little excessive.
Yeah. Did they even show you any paperwork?
No,
on that?
No. They would just do it, obviously, because I'm on parole and they, you know, they could search me, but at some point, you have to think it's something else than just, you know, a routine search. You know, if a parole agent goes there, drug tests you and searches and everything's okay, and they come once a month, then okay, they're doing their job. But if multiple times, then, and I haven't committed any infractions, I haven't committed any other crimes, so what's the cause? It's like they're picking on me. You know, they're picking on me, and I feel like they definitely picked on me, and I was an easy target. I don't know if it's my race, where I grew up at, or what it may be.
The Fourth Amendment of the Constitution and the Constitution of many states protect people from unreasonable searches and seizures. These constitutional rules mean that a police officer typically needs a specific indication of criminal activity or evidence before conducting a search. Often, they need a warrant. But when people get out of prison on parole, they agree to comply with certain conditions. State laws often specify the conditions, and a common one is that the parolee has to submit to searches by law enforcement. Courts often consider parolees to be in, quote, constructive custody of the government. In other words, courts have the view that the government has control over parolees, even though the former prisoners are out in society. Search conditions typically say that former offenders agree to submit to searches of themselves, their residences, and their vehicles or property. Sometimes a parole search must be based on reasonable cause or reasonable suspicion of unlawful activity. Often, though, the search doesn't require that kind of basis. Law enforcement generally can't, however, perform searches just to harass.
Tell us a little bit more about the place that you grew up at. I mean, because I'm not from San Francisco.
I grew up in the Mission. You know, it's a predominantly Hispanic neighborhood. You know, Hispanic and African American, very impoverished. You know, so obviously, you know, it's a lot going on in that area. So people that grow up in these communities automatically have certain stigmas that and labels that the, you know, that the authorities give them, you know, and that's what I'm referring to. Like, I grew up in the Mission, and it's not no question of how the Mission is. Like, you know, it's an impoverished place, and wherever there's poverty, people commit crimes. But that doesn't necessarily mean that I'm like a criminal or I'm, you know, partaking in it.
How does this seem to affect your family? Because it seems like they try to drag them through the same BS.
Yeah, it's very stressful because, you know, they treat me and my family like a bunch of criminals, you know. We law, like I said, my family, we're law-abiding people. We pay our taxes, you know. We do everything that any, you know, normal law-abiding American citizen does. But, you know, the treatment's still biased.
And it seems like this is stuff still hanging on from all those years ago when you went to prison.
Yes, most definitely.
Can you tell me a little bit about your family as far as where they're from, how they ended up in the Mission, do you know?
Yeah, my family's from Honduras. And, you know, my father migrated here in the 80s with my mother. And we've been in San Francisco since. Like I said, a predominantly Hispanic and African-American community, so we felt right, you know, right at home. The Mission used to be different in many ways. Like, you know, it was very, like, family-oriented and very warm. You know, most of the people were very warm. Like, you know, you could feel the hospitality. And so, you know, we felt right at home, even though we immigrated here. And talking about giving back to the community, you know, that's what my parents do. You know, my father's a coach, works with kids, and my mother works at the hospital, you know, helping impoverished people with medical insurance and stuff. That's, you know, so we always give to the community. So that's why, for these reasons, that's why it's so strange that even my parents get the same treatment as me. You know, like, it's really unfair.
Kareem, I really appreciate it, man. I thank you for the few minutes. I mean, you had a rough, definitely a rough weekend. It's been a rough month, rough start to the year. And for you to give me a couple of minutes and get this down, it means a lot to me. And I really hope that I can get it out to a lot of people who are going to listen to this.
Yeah.
And just to kind of shed some light on the situation, especially with the changes in bail, especially with the focus of a lot of law enforcement really harassing people. But yeah, man, with that, I'll go ahead and kill this unless there's anything else you want to add or anything else you want to say.
That's it right there. Thank you for having me, man, and this and for allowing me to be on this platform. You know, I feel like it's a blessing. I'm just thankful.
Yeah, absolutely. And I definitely want to get your story out, man. Thank you.
All right, appreciate it.
I appreciate it.
Yep.
Kareem's case is still pending. Danilo Barraza is set to appear before court in mid-April on one count of murder.
Tramp Lube Media.